Northwest, the legend of Bigfoot dates back hundreds of years.
This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
He became the first cabinet-level politician from a G8 country to publicly state that there is extraterrestrial life present on Earth.
Strange Harbor, online at strangeharbor.net.
They say everything that we know, everything that we are, everything that we have comes from the people living on Nibiru.
Strange Harbor, be strange.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird. We talk about Sasquatch and UFOs, alien abduction, conspiracies, near-death experience, ghosts, and a whole lot of weird. I am Johnny Manson, and she is MUFON investigator Sherita Seuss.
Keeping it real with UFOs.
And our guest today is becoming a regular. She has this wonderful website, skyshipsovercashiers.com, and she's always just seems like five steps ahead of everybody else in like the UFOs and Bigfoots and things like that. Mary Joyce, welcome back.
Wow, I wish I could live up to that. I don't think I'm that many steps ahead of a number of people.
You, as one person, have got it over hundreds. I would read almost everything on your website I could get my hands on, and you're up to date. You're absolutely got your finger in a multitude of pies. I'm actually very happy to speak to you, Mary.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
I know Johnny knows you well, but, you know, I got a little bit to know you a little bit well by just taking part in your great website. It's very organized. It's scientific for us researchers and scientists who want to grasp something that something new, something different, something that we want to know. But it's for anyone. I mean, you can be a total beginner and get absorbed by all the material you have on there.
I deliberately try to write in a very concise, to the point style, and I always try to have photos in there. I don't think people want to just read gray matter. So you're right. I really do try to reach people who may be totally new to some of these subjects.
Well, your website really spoke to me, and I am a a constant, I'm coming back. So I really enjoyed it. And there are some topics that are relatively new to me. In this field of the paranormal and UFOs and Bigfoot. I mean, you actually wrote books about both UFOs and Bigfoot. Do you know how diverse that is? It's so diverse.
I know. I get bored if I get just stuck on one subject, and I think a lot of other people do too, and that's why we don't just constantly, you know, just put UFO photos on the page or on the website.
Well, I love that. What I would like to speak about this morning first is Antarctica. You are a investigator, par none, when it comes to looking at Google Earth and Google Mars. And you have found some really interesting things, both on Earth and Mars, that kind of make us sisters, the planet's sisters. I would like you to explain the new Mars structures, astronauts that may be living on Mars. Give us a kind of a rundown on the things that you've been investigating there.
Let me throw some stuff out because some of your listeners might like to follow through on some of this themselves. I have discovered for myself, using Google Earth Mars, some incredible things. This tool is out there for anybody. So I would encourage, you know, people to open up the Google Earth and then you open up the Mars section and start doing some exploring for yourself. Now, I'm not saying you'll immediately find a treasure, but back in 2011 when I started doing this kind of thing on Mars, I found something that looks like a biosphere. And it was in the northern hemisphere, and it was pretty good size. It was over 650 feet in length. And then in 2016, which would, 5 years later, I found another one, and this one was in the southern hemisphere and much bigger. It was over 7,000 feet in length. And the reason I thought it was a biosphere, I mean, it does not look like some kind of structure you would expect to see on Mars, but I started doing some investigating, and there is a man, and I'm going to mutilate his last name. His name is Brian Versteeg. It's V-E-R-S-T-E-E-G. And he is a conceptual architectural engineer who designs space concepts, and he designs biospheres for space. And his work has appeared as illustrations for Deep Space Industries and Orbital Systems and Mars Foundation and National Geographic. So he is quite revered in his field. And in an article that I posted in 2016, I have one of his illustrations of a biosphere right next to what I found on Mars. And even though the Mars image is blurred out, probably some deliberately, you can see the similarity. So that indicates that, yeah, we have people on Mars, and that's a concrete thing that anybody can find. And your listeners can go to our website, which is skyshiptovercashers.com, and I give you the coordinates so you can find them real easily for yourself.
Oh, I love that. I love that you had coordinates, because often people like myself who have been a scientist and do a lot of research want to see for ourselves. But I notice that some things are blurred because they probably found out, the people that, you know, had these great images of Mars, found out that, you know, people were realizing there was biospheres on there, and they wanted to quiet it down, which is really a shame. It kind of brings us to the other thing that you found on Mars.
Can I ask you a question? Are you getting the interference on the phone, or is it just my end of it?
We're getting the interference.
We're hearing it, too. We're probably being tapped because of you, Mary.
Well, it's possible. That's because it was getting really, really dense, and I had to wonder about that. I'm hearing you better now, Johnny. I was starting to get a little concerned. I'm working on a story about really the confessions of an astronaut, and I'm thinking, oh, God, I'm probably sending up red flags all over the place. But
right.
You were wondering about if some of these things are deliberately blurred out. And repeatedly, I've had the experience of I will post something. I learned that if I go back there, sometimes even within a day of it being up on the website, it's been blurred out or distorted or gone. The most extreme one was when I discovered an entrance into Antarctica, and I think it was within a day when I went back to open that up, it looked like somebody had spilled India ink on it.
Yeah.
And that told me that it's still a very active entrance, or they wouldn't bother to do that.
It is active. And I know there are reptilians in a cave there with volcanic activity. I just know they use it. And the military keeps talking about saucers all the time in Antarctica. All the time.
Yeah, it's a very active place. And there's, you know, quite a bit of very convincing testimony from people who are probably in the know that the Nazis were working with the reptilians in Antarctica going way back to even before World War II started.
That's right.
And you mentioned the volcanoes, and you know, they weren't actually swimming in live volcanoes. There are old tunnels that have been formed by volcanoes, and some of those have been turned into facilities.
Right.
So that would be the volcanic connection. And people would also find it surprising that what I call the western part of Antarctica, which is the west when you're looking toward North America, has a huge number of very active volcanoes, which, you know, is also helping to heat up the ice and probably contributing to the melting of Antarctica.
And making it quite a little cozy place for reptilians.
Apparently. But even some of the people who were involved with Navy intelligence back in World War II knew that UFOs were being flown out of Antarctica and to the moon and back. And that came out from, he had some general title, but his name is Robert Dean. And he had cosmic top secret clearance, and he talked about things like that.
There was something else that you found on Mars.
Yeah, I found like three categories. One is the things that look like biospheres. One are the huge entrances that look contemporary that go into the planet, and the other is I've actually found huge UFOs that are on the surface of the planet.
Now that, both of those, entrances and UFOs, I went to look for myself, and yes, there are large UFOs on the surface of Mars.
I know that I have posted things about at least two of the really big ones. The one I don't have the information right in front of me, but one of them, when you use the measuring tool with Google Earth, which is really wonderful, you can find out how big something is in feet or inches or miles. And this particular one is over 3.5 miles in diameter. And it's clearly something that's above the surface or sitting on the surface because it creates a shadow. A craft that's 3.5 miles in diameter is pretty good size.
Well, I saw that on your website, and it really is astounding. The things that I'm hearing about what comes towards our sun in our solar system.
Oh, you found those? I love those.
Oh, my gosh.
And you might actually appreciate how that came to be. I was contacted by a man in the Netherlands, and he is one of these computer geniuses. And he was taking NASA photos, and I would see the original, and then he did what he called dusting and cleaning, so he'd get rid of the interference so you could see them real clearly. And they were shown with tremendous detail. If people are interested in seeing that, I know that he contacted me in 2013, so it would be in the global link section of the website, and scroll down to the bottom because I think it was early that year, and that is where we began to post his stuff. I believe we did it in the following year also. But these things are huge,
right.
And they're all bigger than Jupiter, which is our biggest planet. Jupiter looks, you know, minuscule compared to some of these things, and the amount of detail that comes forth in some of these are quite astonishing.
Well, I thought the fact that one of them was square was just amazing. It's like a collection unit for energy, right to the sun. And collecting the energy from the sun or whatever it is that it's collecting. And
right, and there's many different shapes.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's one we call the Phoenix because it looks like a, you know, it looks like the Phoenix with flying wings. There's another one that looks like a flying cross, but you go into detail and it looks metallic with quite a distinctive structure to it. So no, they don't all look the same, even though we see them around the sun. I kept track of one. It was, oh my God, I think I was able to see it on the monitors for like 57 days in a row.
Oh, yeah.
And it just slowly passed by the sun. And again, these things are huge. So when people start to say, oh, you know, all the UFOs are man-made, and yes, some of them are, just look at the ones that are seen in the deep space by our photos taken by the satellites. And you just cannot dismiss that because no human being could make those.
I'm not sure if I'm saying this right, but Amuhu, the object that moved through our solar system recently?
Oh, I don't know how to say it, so you're on your own. But I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's a Hawaiian name, and very serious scientist of astrophysicists stated that he believed that it was alien technology, and it was very long and cylindrical, and it was rotating from end to end, its long end over its long end. But it had the ability to slow down and to speed up. And
if I saw a picture of that originally, I wouldn't be the first one to jump on the wagon and say that's a UFO. But we had something happen here in western North Carolina, and I live in the mountains of western North Carolina. The website is named after a ridgetop community called Cashers, so that's the name, Skyships Over Cashers, and that's why it started. We had a gal who lived up, she doesn't live there anymore, but she was really our sky watcher, and she really kept an eye and a camera handy so she'd catch these things in the sky. One of the strangest things she found was she got pictures of things that looked like asteroids, but they were closer to the ground or closer to the Earth, and they could hover, but they looked like rocky asteroids.
Uh-huh.
But clearly they weren't, because asteroids wouldn't act that way. So I don't know. Maybe that's a camouflage ship.
It's very possible. it's funny you should say that, because the coating of an asteroid is very protective. And if there are many species of alien that visit Earth, then they would all have different ideas on how to create a ship or a probe or anything like that.
Which would explain why we see so many different shapes,
right.
You know, in pictures and photos and in the sky ourselves sometimes if we get lucky.
Well, I'm a MUFON investigator, and I have the ability to go into MUFON's computer system and just spend hours looking at the pictures that people send us. Actually, anyone can do this if they want to. And you're right. The shapes and the materials that they're made of, the colored lights of everything there, and the material that they're made out of. Now, that brings up another question. Two kids who secretly tested Roswell UFO material, can you tell us about that?
That was one of the most difficult stories to get. I no longer work there, but when I worked at a place in here in town where I live, it was a place where I got to interact with people a lot. And there was this one gal who I got to know over the years, and she knew I was doing all this stuff about UFOs, and she finally, after knowing me, I think for several years, finally told me that her dad had worked at Roswell and had worked at, you know, was involved in the space stuff, and that she and her little friend, her boyfriend, but they were kids, actually got a piece of from space, from the ship that the boy's father had kept in his personal office at home. The boy had gotten into it, and he wanted to share it with his best friend. Well, this could be wadded up like a piece of aluminum foil, and as soon as you let go of it, it would pop right back to its original shape. And so these two kids, I mean, it took, like I said, years, and I finally got her to sit down, and she's telling me the story. If people want to hear it straight from the horse's mouth, and it's the first time she'd told anybody, including her husband, you just tap on the YouTube button on our website. I think that's the only way you can get to it. And so the story is there. And she was apparently very, very scared to, you know, share her story.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
That was because of a personal friendship that I finally got it out of her. I was a bit of a pest. I would periodically bring it up. And that's the essence of the story. But these two kids were quite ingenious, because they kept trying to destroy this piece of metal. And they ironed it, they put it in the oven, they took it to a place where they used to play with the horses, and had the, what do you call the man that does the shoeing of the horses? I can't think of it right now. But anyhow, they had him, put a lot of heat to it. Nothing would destroy this piece of metal from the ship.
That's
would have been from Roswell.
Wow, that's an amazing story. I definitely want to see that YouTube when I get home. That's
and
exciting.
I don't think you can get to it via the regular YouTube. I think you have to go to Skyships Over Cashers and then hit the YouTube logo. We don't do those too often, but that's where that is.
Okay, the super secret stuff. Okay, so I have another question. I got a few. All right, so you live in North Carolina, so you probably have been to maybe Eastern Tennessee, and you know about something there that's pretty exciting for our listeners?
And you're going to have to give me a bigger hint.
How about Little People?
Oh, Little People. I did a book called Cherokee Little People Were Real, and I did that some time ago. If I were to write it now, I wouldn't put it in the past tense. At the time, I was recording interviews with the old-timers who had been involved in doing construction at Western Carolina University, which is in this part of the state. And so I spent my Saturdays 1 year around kitchen tables interviewing these guys. And I found out that nobody had written down their stories. Nobody had anything recorded about these little people that apparently lived in there was quite a few of them where the campus is now. So these old guys that I interviewed, they were mostly construction people, and when they would cut into what was supposed to be virgin land, they would find these little tunnels, and the tunnels were roughly like 2.5 feet wide and no more than like 3 and a half feet tall, and they were square cut, always in red dense clay, and the top of the tunnels were arched, and so it seemed like no matter where they dug, they found these tunnels. They also found at least one little skeleton.
Aww.
And for a long time, one of the professors kept the skull of this little skeleton on his desk, and he said it was from a child's skull from one of the Indian mounds. Well, one of the English teachers, I think, from the high school, picked it up one day and looked at it real closely and said, "This is not a child's skull. This has all its wisdom teeth," which, you know, you have to be, what, at least 18 to start hatching wisdom teeth.
Yeah.
So that's some of what I found. But since I wrote the book, I have slowly gotten stories from people, often Indians, who say there are still little people here in the mountains of Western North Carolina. Now, is that kind of what you were going for?
Yes. What approximate size did you figure that these little people were or are?
Generally speaking, about 3.5 feet tall.
Yeah.
So they're not, a lot of people think they're fairies or, you know, little teeny tiny things. They're not. They're perfectly proportioned little people.
That doesn't surprise me, actually. All over the world, there were small people, little people. And,
that's right.
Especially on certain islands. And as a biologist, I know that depending on food sources, people can be very small. There were sideshows that had small little people.
More with Mary Joyce of SkyshipsOverCashiers.com coming up on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
This is Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and we've been talking with Mary Joyce of SkyshipsOverCashiers.com about UFOs, Sasquatch, and right now little people inhabiting the forests in Tennessee.
This is not super surprising that there was a whole colony and may still be there in Tennessee, but why they haven't reached out to us kind of begs the question, is that why Bigfoot doesn't reach out? they have their own culture and they don't want anything to do with us.
Well, I don't know about you, but I don't much like what human beings are doing. So I'm not sure I would reach out to us either.
Yeah. I have to agree with that. How about you, Johnny?
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yep.
That good answer.
Well, let me tell you a cute story. Maybe your listeners would like to hear that. There was an Indian woman. I met her when she was 29. She never would have talked to me except she and I had a mutual friend, and because of that trust, she decided to trust me. And her story's really cute. She lived in the more remote section of the Cherokee Indian Reservation, which is, like a 20-minute drive from where I am. And her family kept a small trailer way up in the mountains in this remote area, and that's where they would have, like, family reunions or gatherings. And they used the trailer as a place for the restrooms and for cooking. So at one of these gatherings, all the kids, including her, she was a child at the time, they were playing hide-and-seek. And she decided to go hide in the shower of this trailer. And when she pulled back the curtain, there was a little man that she said looked a lot like, I think it's Moji from The Jungle Book. Have I got his name right? It's something like that.
Oh, sure.
And he had the straight black, straight cut hair. She said he just grinned real big at her, and she just ran to her daddy. Mm. That's the kind of stories I start to pick up once people realize I've really written a book about little people, and I won't laugh at them.
I'm going to have to pick up the book. It's Cherokee Little People Were Real, and now you know they are real. Are you going to write another book?
I don't know. There's a lot of work to it. I do a lot of stuff on the website. If I were to do another one, it would probably be about UFOs and how all these things can... I don't know. There's just so much of it. I don't know what I can do with it.
Well, it's on everybody's mind right now that disclosure is coming at the end of June or July, depending when we can...
Would you like to hear my unabashed feelings about this?
The government
is spoon-feeding us UFO information, and they're doing that now. They are letting us... they're making it out to be like a really big deal that they're releasing radar pictures from pilots of these little UFOs that you can't see any detail but go blipping across the sky. Big deal. I lived on Cocoa Beach between the Kennedy Space Center and Patrick Air Force Base back in the late 80s. I moved there in 1986, just in time to see the shuttle disaster. That's quite an experience to see that firsthand, by the way. I got to meet a number of people who worked at NASA. So I knew stuff back in the 80s.
Yeah.
That just point out how little we are being told at this point, despite all the stuff that's being on the media right now.
Well, I agree completely. My father was an aerospace engineer for all the major aerospace industry companies.
Where was he located?
He was in California. He was at Rockwell, Northrop, started at Aeronautics. He did all of the space stuff. He worked with...
No wonder you're interested in all this.
Oh, yeah. My dad came home with the first pictures of Mars in the 80s, I think it was, with the first satellite, and they were all red. The screen, you know, it showed red and some beiges, and I was fascinated. I'd go through every single one. He had the entire series. And there were all these different things that looked like structures on there, and I would ask him about that.
Oh, you got to see the ones with the structures before they wiped them out?
Yeah, this was directly off the satellite. These were where he worked, and they gave them to each of the working members that worked there. And they were huge sheets. They were like big printout graph sheets. Yeah, it was really interesting. So I knew early on, early teens, that we were being completely lied to by the United States government. I knew about Blue Book when I was like 12.
Yeah, and so you're with me on this, that they're just spoon-feeding us.
Oh, yeah. The moon is hollow, for God's sake. Do you think they're going to tell us that someday?
I don't know. I personally don't think that, I don't know what's going to happen in June. At some point or another, the government's going to have to open up about stuff. But the information is not going to come from the top down. The information is going to come through with shows like yours or it's going to come through with websites like mine, or it's that's the way the information's getting out to people. And I'm not holding my breath for any major thing coming from the government, and if they do, it's still going to be an understatement for what they really know.
Well, Nick Pope comes on the show, and I know Johnny and Nick have a nice relationship. You know, he kind of hangs out here in Washington and goes to Johnny's conference here, and he's about feeling the same as you. And he's frustrated. He's frustrated as heck. And most of the people that I speak to in the UFO community, which is quite a few when you work with MUFON, they all feel the same way. It's like we already know that they're going to dribble out some stuff and kind of placate us and act stupid so that people think that we don't already have, you know, men on Mars or men and women on the moon right now, and that there's not something on the back side of the moon. I mean, how stupid do they really think we all are?
I don't know. Like I said, in recent years, I'm beginning to find out that stupid is pretty prevalent.
A recent study suggests that our species has been getting dumber.
I'll tell you what I'm working on right now, and it'll be up on the website next week. You may be familiar with Clark McClellan.
Mm.
Clark McClellan was an astronaut who worked at the Kennedy Space Center. He was specifically trained as a space shuttle operator, which means he could operate the space vehicles from mission control. And so it was his job to take over if necessary or to fix problems if there were problems. I did get to meet him when I lived in Florida, and he felt that NASA was keeping, and the government was keeping, too much information from the public. He felt like the public had a right to know at least a little bit more about ETs and a few other subjects.
Right.
He talked too much. And so he got, to the best they could, they erased him. They cut off his benefits. They blackballed him so he couldn't get other jobs because he just said a little bit too much about what he knew. And he was at the Space Center for 35 years. His immediate boss was his ultimate boss, I should say, was the number two man in NASA, who only reported to Wernher von Braun.
Oh.
So he knew the astronauts. And his girlfriend was actually Judith Resnick, who was killed in the Space Shuttle Challenger explosion. He died in April of this year. And in the time coming, you know, running up to his death, he was turning over his papers to a man I've never heard of. His name is Harry Cooper. And Harry Cooper had promised that he would publish this information. Clark McClellan had been blocked from doing that all of his life. They would not, you know, any time he tried to get it out there, there was interference. So I am doing a series of articles on some of the things that he revealed in his papers. So that's what I'm working on right now.
Oh, my gosh, what a...
So that'll be coming out this next week.
Well, I'll be on there daily trying to find it.
I know I've got Johnny's... Johnny, do you get notices that I send out?
I sure do.
Okay, well, then you'll know, because every time I post new material, I send out a notice, so you guys will be you'll be notified that way.
Oh, excellent, excellent. You're such a great resource for anyone that's interested in everything. You even wrote a book, Tangible Evidence of Jesus, Left Behind for Us to Find.
Yeah, that just shows you how I've just spread it out all over the board. That's each book is totally unrelated to any other book I've done. And I don't write things that I think have already been covered. I try to do stuff that's worth writing about.
I want to talk a little bit about Bigfoot. As I moved here I was born in California, and Bigfoot just isn't a word that's used in everyday conversation. When I moved to Washington about 3 years ago, Bigfoot is a part of the culture here.
Yeah, you moved into hot territory. There's no doubt about that.
I have been doing a lot of reading, and I have your book, Bigfoot Beyond the Footprints, and was just tickled pink to learn how human and glorious Bigfoot really is.
Now, the reason I wrote that book was because I was sick and tired of just hearing about footprints and about all these monster stories about, Bigfoot. And I had talked to enough people who had had wonderful firsthand experiences with Bigfoot, and I thought, people need to see the other side of this creature. And that was the inspiration for writing that book.
Our listeners are very interested in Bigfoot.
I think a lot of the confusion is with, we always thought it was just one, and it was just one, like Elvis. It's like, it's the same Bigfoot seen in all these different places in different states.
Yeah. And it's confusing because the word Bigfoot is used the same way we use the word moose. Moose is used both plural and singular, and that's the same thing with Bigfoot.
Right, right.
But Bigfoot's a lot easier to spell than Sasquatch.
Yeah. Isn't that
and
the
I don't
truth?
Think the Bigfoot care because they didn't pick either of those names. And the earliest story I have of a Bigfoot goes back to the Civil War. And at that point, they called them forest people. Mm-hmm. So the words Sasquatch and Bigfoot are, you know, relatively new.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Well, there's some fabulous stories about how the Native Americans here in, you know, North America got along so well with Sasquatch. They you know, interacted with them on some levels.
They regarded them as another clan.
I believe it's the state of Montana, and if I'm wrong, I'm sorry, Montana, but there is a individual who's seeking to get a bill passed to be able to hunt.
It's Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
Yes.
And that just rubs me wrong way every way.
Yeah, I put that on the website with information so anybody who wanted to express their opposition could do so to the Oklahoma legislature, and it did not pass. But the guy whose name escapes me now, I guess,
yeah.
I don't really want to remember him. He wears a cowboy hat and tries to, he looks like an accountant who wants to be a cowboy is what he looks like.
Right.
And he's tried to find other ways to circumvent it by, like, offering an award for the capture of one, not the killing of one. And, you know, I don't know if he will be successful or not, but at least it didn't get passed by the legislature.
Right.
Oh, gosh. That worried me for a long time when I heard that.
There's a county here in Washington that made it murder if someone was...
Yeah, I read that a long time ago. I don't remember any of the details, but I was glad to see it.
I think it's the Army Corps of Engineers handbook from, I think, 1978. It has, you know, all the vegetation of Washington and what to expect, animals and stuff, and apparently it has a Sasquatch in there, and it tries to describe a 1978 perspective of it. But if you can find one of those. I think it's the Army Corps of Engineer manual.
How about if we get back to disclosure? Now, I know we both agree that the United States is not going to be disclosing anything of value, but they have disclosed that there is something out there that they can't describe or it's unknown. I don't believe that, but that's what they're saying. How do we take that and move it forward to get it to the people that, yes?
Well, I don't know the answer. The most recent thing that I have tried, and I just did it this a few days ago, he's on MSNBC. He gave a bit of coverage to this phenomena of pilot images and the news being released, and he seemed like he might be personally interested in the topic. So I sent him a link to something I've just posted within the last few days on our Facebook page, and it is a, I guess it's on a regular page too. It's something from the International Space Center or Space Station.
Oh, I saw that.
And you can see what looks to be like a rather detailed UFO So I sent it to him and told him if he ever wanted more information, I would be happy to provide it to him. So whenever you see an opening where somebody might be interested, then you just kind of leap in and give it a shot. You may or may not get anywhere because, you know, the media people are controlled by their bosses, too.
Right, right.
And the bosses of the bosses.
Of the bosses. Got it. Elizondo has been going on different news programs. Are you familiar with him? He's the
not
one
in a great deal of detail, but I know who he is.
Yeah.
I've seen a little bit of YouTubes of him speaking. That's the extent of my knowledge.
He was in charge at one time of ATIP, which was a government kind of a black ops kind of thing where dark money went to look into all UFOs and alien presence. And he quit because they wouldn't release any of that information to the public. So he is kind of a superstar of releasing information bits by bits. And I have him on Twitter and Facebook and anything else. And you're
familiar. Do you think he's releasing information beyond a certain level? Do you think he is still limiting what he is letting out?
Yeah, I think he has to.
Because some of these people who've been deeply involved with some of this stuff, when they do, you know, shed their skin and go public, sometimes that is even contrived.
Well, contrived, maybe. But he had a show, I think it was on the Travel
Channel. I'm not making a conclusion, I just know that can happen.
Oh. Absolutely, it can happen. He had a whole group of scientists and people that were really into UFO discoveries, and it was on TV. I don't know if it's still going or not, but I found it fascinating because he was letting out like an enormous amount of information every week, and he was... He was making it seem like he just found out this. Do you understand what I mean?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that's how he's getting around just saying, when I was at ATIP, we did blah, blah, blah.
Gotcha. He's putting a buffer of protection around himself.
That's right. And he is not very happy about what's been released and what kind of disclosure the United States has made already, and he has no hope. Nick Pope doesn't either. He just goes, come on, get real.
Why would you not trust the United States government?
I find myself in quite a quandary because I certainly, put a lot of stuff on the website which indicates that the government's hiding stuff from us. So that would fall into what people call conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
At the same time, this country, too many of our citizens have gone bonkers in the other direction, swallowing different conspiracy theories, hook, line, and sinker, and I think causing a lot of problems.
Just looking at your books, how diverse they are, just shows how you have not only an imagination, but the skills to research all this, and your website... I just found it fascinating. Let me get this right. Skyshipsovercashiers.com.
Right. And if somebody types in Skyships Over and a C, they'll probably get it. Cashiers is the way they pronounce it around here, the name of the town. It's spelled just like a cashier at the grocery store.
I would advise anyone that's interested in any subject about UFOs and what may be around our sun, what is or isn't on Mars, what's in our skies, definitely go to this website. And this has really been an honor. Johnny's been talking about you for quite some time.
Well, we did a story on Johnny, too.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. You don't know that?
No.
Oh, wow.
Share. I would love to leave the door open and have you on again, especially after you've released the information of Clark McClellan, the astronaut, the space shuttle operator, who gave his information to Harry Cooper. I just can't wait to read that information.
We probably run out of time, but let me just give you some information, even if you can't use it. It's kind of one of these woo-woo things. And on May 17th, I was scheduled to be on a pre-record for a radio show. And I was supposed to talk about Bigfoot. Well, I had seen something about, the UFO information coming out on TV that morning. I was totally pissed. And at the last minute, I decided and asked for permission to change the subject. So I got into some of the things you and I have been talking about. And that was on May 17th. Well, I found out in my research that this book had just been released, and it was printed about Clark McClellan on May 17th. So the day his book comes out, releasing his papers, I get this nudge at the very last minute to talk about stuff like that on the radio show. And I just thought that was really kind of interesting.
Synchronistic. That's...
And one other thing, since you were involved in MUFON, did you know Angelia Scheer?
Yeah.
Did you know she passed away?
No.
Yeah, she had a brain tumor and died this year. A delightful woman. I mean, MUFON could only benefit from somebody like her. That is a warning to people not to have their cell phone up to their ear. The brain tumor was right where you would hold the cell phone, and there are cases. It wouldn't even be able to count them. Oftentimes, children who get the brain tumor in the same part of the head, it's usually on the right hand or the right side, because most people are right-handed. And that's where the tumor develops, and the electromagnetic stuff from the phone is not good for the brain.
Well, radiation is nasty. It doesn't matter what form it comes in, like electromagnetics.
And also, you can do a little experiment. I was reading stuff, and I thought, I've heard for years about tinfoil protecting people, and these UFO nuts would put a tinfoil hat on.
Right.
And so I was reading something about it, and I thought, And so I did an experiment, and I wrapped my cell phone in tin foil or aluminum foil and called from my house phone, and it wouldn't go through. Took the tin foil off, and it worked.
It makes
us all want to rush out and get a tin foil hat.
We're tin foil hat wearing whack jobs.
Mary, you have a wonderful day, and please leave the door open for us to talk again.
Always good to talk to you.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. If you want to know more about Mary Joyce and her fabulous website, Skyships Over Cashiers, if you want to listen to back episodes, buy some Strange Harbor merchandise, or contact us and yell at us for being tinfoil hat wearing whack jobs, log on to strangeharbor.net.